meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Let's go! Batter up! We're taking the afternoon off! It's a beautiful day for a ball game, for a ball game today. The fans are out to get a ticket or two. From Walla Walla, Washington to Kalamazoo. It's a beautiful day for a home run, but even a triple's okay. We're gonna cheer and boo and raise a hullabaloo at the ball game today.
Well, it is a beautiful day for a ball game, but we're not at it. Welcome to Winds of Change. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. And I am joined today by my friend Mike Stark, who is the producer of the Truth and Life Bible series. If you do not have it, get it for your iPhone or your other electronic device. Mike is also the producer of a new documentary coming out this month on Cardinal Francis George. So, Mike, welcome.
Thanks for letting me put my little music spin in there when I filled in for
Mike
you.
Mike is wearing his Cubs jersey.
When I filled in for you in August, I always had a little music. Nick and I played the music like intros, but coming out of the breaks. And I thought, that's how the Cub games used to start when we were growing up. Vince Lloyd and Lou Boudreau on WGN Radio.
Lou Boudreau, I remember.
Good kid.
Well, Nick, we have to talk about me getting my own like musical intro. Nick has given me the thumbs up. I never thought of having my own musical intro.
We did
intro.
It. We started with Carl. Yeah. When I had Carl Amari, my partner on the Audio Bible, on.
Right.
We played some old music stuff. And then we actually played the whole Who's on First, Abbott and Costello.
Oh, it was very a bit, good.
Because we were reminiscing on the radio. And then I thought, why not? And you could have that too.
And the Cubs are
Cubs are playing today.
They're playing today. Right now. Mike and listeners, this is how much Mike thinks of you as listeners of Winds of Change. He gave up Cub tickets for this afternoon's game to come on the air with me. So I'm very grateful to him, but he got to play his song and he's wearing a jersey. So all is good. All
and
is
we're
well.
Not far from the ballpark. I
and
can go over there later.
Right. He could get hit
tickets are still available, fans.
Who are they playing today?
They're playing the Brewers.
Milwaukee. So this is for the spot in the...
Well, they're both going to the playoffs, but this is for the Central Championship. They ended up tied with the same record.
Okay.
And so the winner of today's game gets a couple days off, and the loser has to play in a wild card game tomorrow against the loser of the Dodgers and Rockies, which for the first time in Major League history is there's two playoff games today.
Wow.
And so then if the Cubs win, they'll most likely face the Brewers in a best-of-five series starting on Thursday at Wrigley Field. But if they lose... They'll have to play probably the Dodgers tomorrow, and then if they win that, then they'll have to go to Milwaukee, which is Wrigley Field.
This is like a big deal.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
this is the best time. Plus, the Bears just put it on the Buccaneers yesterday too.
Right. Well, I mean, so great time to be a Chicago sports fan.
Yes, it is.
And but thank you. I know this is a sacrifice for you. And I am grateful, and I know our listeners are grateful that you're joining us.
I don't know if they want to hear from me again. But
good
to be here.
Thank you. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about, don't we?
Yes, we do.
This is going to be an action-packed show, listeners, so buckle your seatbelts. So starting, let's start with the day. Today is the feast of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, a doctor of the church, known commonly as the Little Flower. And I did not know this before this morning, but you and I both have a devotion.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how you came to know her.
Well, I've had some instances in my life that have been a little tough, and I knew of her, and I just, I don't remember who it was that advised me to pray a novena to her, but I did. And ironically, you know, again, Cubs reference, in 2015, October, you know, beginning of October, I went up to a rosary mass up in Wisconsin with Archbishop Listecki. And I wore my Cubs jersey, and he doesn't like the Cubs, so he said I needed to be exercised.
It's better that he's across the cheddar curtain there in Wisconsin.
Bet. You bet. Yeah. But at any rate, when I was up there, it was the last day of my novena for Therese, and I, you know, I've heard that people have rose petals or roses or something to pretty much confirm what you are praying
for. So do you know where that comes from? So when she was dying, I remember she died at the age of 24.
Right.
She had biological sisters who were also her religious sisters in the convent. So she had three sisters who were in the same Carmelite convent that she was in, and also, you know, it's her other religious sisters that she would call her sisters. And she said as she lay dying, listen, don't worry, I will come back. I will come down. I will shower down roses. So, you know, basically, so I will send down a shower of roses. You will know I am in heaven. So it is the custom that when one prays the Novena to St. Therese, that one has an expectation of receiving a rose in some way to know that St. Therese has heard and will intercede for their intentions.
So I'm in the church, and I'm like thinking, okay, where's my rose? Where's my rose? And I was, you know, just not really expecting it, but I was, you know, hopeful. And sure enough, as soon as I was done, I look forward as I'm sitting in the church, and there's a bouquet of roses right in front of me. I mean,
wow,
just a bouquet of roses. Now, why is that bouquet of roses there? I was like, okay, I believe. Don't get me wrong, I believe. But it was just like, bam, there it was. And you had your own experience this morning, didn't you?
I did. So I just posted this on my Facebook page for those of you who follow me on Facebook, that I was at Mass this morning. I dropped my daughter off at the Catholic school she attends, and then there's a school starts at 8 and 8:10, and Mass is at 8, so I was a couple minutes late, and the church was quite dark. So I just kind of grabbed a random pew and just got there right at the gospel. And so after communion, I came back, and I had... there was like a bulletin in my pew, so I knew that was my pew because there was a bulletin sitting in the middle of the pew. And so I got back in and knelt down and looked down on the floor, and there were rose petals on the floor. And I have brought them in. Listeners, I've just shown Mike the rose petals, beautiful pink rose petals, a little bit dried now. My guess is they were from a wedding that was held on Saturday, but they were there on the floor. So I looked, and I said, that can't be rose petals. And I bent down and I picked one up and I kind of smelled them like, that is it. That is a rose petal. And so I picked all of them up and put them in my purse. And I think the person, you know, across the aisle from me was looking at me like I was a little bit crazy. But it was such a beautiful moment because my daughter and I have a fifth grader, and she and I were praying the final day of our novena prayers to St. Therese. And I was talking about that. I was telling her the story. I said, do you know why we look for roses? And this is what she said, that she would shower down roses. And I had no expectation of getting or seeing a rose today at all. And that's when I think she most likes to surprise you, you know. So, but it's, have you read her Story of a Soul, her autobiography?
I know her story. I saw the Leonardo da Filippis.
The play.
They had the play at the Little Sisters of the Poor several years ago. You know, they invited me to attend that. I did have one question for, even though it's your show, we'll take turns interviewing each other.
Yep.
Did the pastor then ask you if you would like to assume the job as a janitor for his parish?
No, the pastor was not there. The priests of the archdiocese are this week, not this week, but today and tomorrow at an all-day meeting for pastors up at up in Rosemont, I believe. So he was not there. So it was one of the retired priests. But I will have to tell him. Maybe he'll see.
And your daughter doesn't know about the roses
either.
No,
she doesn't, because she's at school.
When you pick her up, you'll be like, I got something for you.
And no, I'll tell my whole family, because, you know, one of my daughters had a math test this morning, and I said to her, ask St. Therese for help.
Sure, she got 100%.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so, because it's, you know, high school math is not easy, and I couldn't even help her with her homework at this point in my life, because I was bad at math when I was in a class, and now that I've been out of them for several years, it's not much better.
Just a few.
But Therese's book, so Therese is considered a doctor of the church, which means she's been recognized in a special way for contributing to the church's sort of spiritual life and, you know, intellectual patrimony in a way that's significant. So there's only two other female doctors of the church, St. Catherine of Siena, who was the great Dominican saint, and then St. Teresa of Avila, who was a profound writer and really reformed the Carmelite order. And Therese, you know, is distinguished among the group of the Doctors of the Saints, all of whom were very learned, you know, at kind of doctoral degree levels and wrote prolifically and left behind incredible legacies, is that she died at 24.
So she entered at 15.
She had special permission from the Pope to enter at 15. And so she entered at 15. She was dead by 24. And when they were, when she was dying, when it was clear she wasn't going to, you know, live for more than another couple days, the sister who was in charge of writing, basically was an obit in that time. You would write up a little biography of the person who had just died for circulation among the other Carmelite convents. She was saying to the superior, I don't think we're going to have enough to put in this little circular about her, because it was just, you know, there was, she lived very humbly and very simply. But one of her biological sisters at one point became the superior of the community. So because of that, she ordered Therese under obedience to write down her childhood memories and to write down what Therese had called her little way. She developed this sort of spirituality, this way of living called the little way. And essentially it was having childlike trust that God loves you and that your little sacrifices, doing little things with great love, is just as meaningful to God as doing tremendously great things, you know. So I remember one time being at a wedding. I have two friends who really credit their meeting and their marriage to Saint Therese. And they had this lovely wedding. And I was sitting next to kind of a wise guy at the wedding reception who knew the story as well. And so his toast to her at the wedding was, I hope to always do little things for you with great love. And the guy sitting next to me turned to me and he said, ah, not me. He goes, I'm going to do really big things in a kind of mediocre way. He said, that's going to be my way of spirituality. So, of course, I start laughing hysterically during this very meaningful toast. And it was that guy's fault. I still remember him. But so at any rate, that's so she wrote down at her sister, who was also her superior's request, wrote down, you know, this autobiography. And it was really only after she died that they transcribed it and published it. And it just, you know, for the late 1800s went viral as much as anything could. And people really, not long after her death, began to attribute miracles to her. And then reading that story of a soul, which, listeners, I would recommend to anyone. It is not difficult reading. It is the story of her childhood growing up in a fairly well-to-do family in France and Paris and outside of Paris, rather, and then her development of this doctrine.
Well, her mom died when she was four.
Yeah, her mom died when she was, her mother died of breast cancer when she was four. Her parents had nine children, and five of them survived infancy. She had three brothers and one sister who died. The three boys died in infancy, and her sister, Helene, who was a year or two older than Therese, whom her mother had tremendous affection for. Apparently, this Helene was just a joy to be around. She was this darling child. She never caused any trouble. And I think she got influenza. She died of influenza when she was five. So that was an incredible cross for the mother, because she really loved this little Helene. Was, if you had to pick a favorite, the mother was very, very enamored of her, and then had Therese, and then died of breast cancer. So she would have been 44 or 43, and Therese was four. And so Therese had her eldest sister, who would have been about 19 at the time, who kind of became her second mother, and who was also her godmother. And then when that sister went off to the Carmel to join the convent, Therese was just bereft. But their father was their father, Louis Martin, and her mother was Zélie Martin. They were just an exemplary Catholic couple. The father was an absolutely, if there was ever a human that came close to being St. Joseph, I think it was Louis Martin. And now both he and his wife have been canonized. So St. Therese's parents are now canonized. And there is a cause of canonization also moving forward for her sister Léonie, who was the only one of the sisters not to enter the Carmelite convent. She became a visitation sister, the visitandine community, and she had she suffered terribly with mental illness. She was abused by one of their maids, which the family didn't know until she was an adult, but abused terribly by one of the maids, and that really gave her things like panic attacks and anxiety. And so, but many people who have prayed to her for particular mental health issues have found that their prayers have been answered immediately. So now her cause is moving forward. So today is the Feast of Therese of Lisieux. If you've not read Story of a Soul, get it on Amazon. Read it. You will not be sorry. And yes, Mike.
There's also a shrine for her here in western...
In the Chicago area,
yes,
right.
West of the city. Yeah.
Right, in Darien, Illinois, the
right.
National Shrine.
I've been there
too.
With Father Mike Grezik.
Yes, yes, Father Mike Grezik, who I know is listening to us now. So, well, listeners, we're going to go to a break, and when we return, we're going to get back to some other topics of the day. We're going to talk about the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. We're going to talk about the new biography on Cardinal George, and we'll talk a little bit more about St. Therese. We'll talk about all of those things when we come back. Here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
And welcome back. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change. And I am joined today by Mike Stark, who is the executive producer of the Truth and Life Bible series. And Mike, where do our listeners find that if they're interested in downloading that?
Oh, well, it's a real tough one to remember, folks. It's www.downloadjesus.com.
Okay.
That's one word. www.downloadjesus.com, and you can listen to the whole New Testament, and it's now
read by professional actors.
Well, it's dramatized. It's like a radio program from the 40s. And it's got the complete, because Dr. Hahn has finished it, the complete Ignatius Study Bible is now, he's done. After 25 years, he says, I'm finally done with it.
My goodness.
So you get the whole thing.
The whole Bible.
Anything that's underlined, you tap on that, and you get his reflections, and then the maps, you can see the maps of crossing the Red Sea or Jesus' baptism or whatever.
So
it's all there to have at...
All for free, right?
Well, not all for free, but most of it for free.
Most of it for free, right.
And then you can get a little bit more, you can get the audio and the Ignatius Study Bible, because Ignatius isn't going to give away a $50 study Bible.
No, I understand. You have to realize you're paying for people's intellectual property, so that's why there's fees for this kind of thing.
We didn't, we spent a few dollars to make the audio Bible, but the audio Bible and the Ignatius Study Bible complete, one-time charge for life on up to 8 devices is big $29.99 or something like that.
Right.
I'll paint any car, any color. Earl Shine.
Yeah, and listeners, it really is.
$29.99. Downloadjesus.com.
Right.
I tell ya.
And if you're somebody who travels a lot, you're in the car a lot, and you know, you get kind of tired of talk radio, even Catholic talk radio, or even sometimes perhaps even this show.
Like, oh, no,
you know,
no,
not this show. Never this show. But you know, you might just want something that's a little more meditative. And so this Truth in Life Bible app is really fantastic way to get a little scripture into your daily commute, listen to some Bible studies.
Bishop Barron's in there.
Yeah.
EWTN. Oh, everything's there. I mean,
yeah.
As Ed McMahon used to say, everything in the Catholic world
is there.
And
is
then
there.
Johnny
right.
Carson would say, not so fast.
Right. So do not miss it.
Communion,
listeners.
Wine,
it's
breath.
Worth your time. So
yes.
Downloadjesus.com is where you got to go for that. So today is October 1st. It is the feast of St. Therese of Lisieux, the little flower. And here in the studio, we have a couple of different Catholic symbols and icons in here. And I just really, of course, I've always known this was here, but I hadn't realized during the first half of our show that we have a beautiful image of St. Therese and what looks to be a first cross relic of her. So I am so grateful. She is looking right at me as I'm speaking about her. And it's wonderful. I'm glad that we have her image in here. And, you know, she was a terrific communicator. And in all her simplicity and her lack of formal education, she managed to transmit and to create sort of a doctrine of spirituality that has lasted well over 100 years. And her book continues to be as popular as it was when it was first published. I think it's now in every single language, you know, that you can imagine. So again, if you're interested in her and you've heard people talk about The Little Flower or The Little Way or St. Therese, pick up a copy of the autobiography. It's great reading, great thing to read, frankly, I would suggest before Christmas, you know, because it talks about our ability to do great things by doing small things with great love. Like she would talk about things like, you know, you see a pin on the floor. And I mean, I try to keep this in mind too, right? Like, you know, and in family life, there's so many opportunities for these little acts of love. And in fact, I remember one time I was reading a reflection in one of the spiritual magazines about how this woman said, I always change the toilet paper rolls in the house. And I thought, that's exactly what I do. Because first of all, I'm the only person that seems to do it in my house. But it's, so you just think like these little mundane tasks that if they're done with love and done with a spirit of service to others, God can make something out of that. You know, changing a diaper, you know, going and minding a neighbor's kid when you don't want to. You know, picking up something in the house, making your children's beds for them on a day that they don't do it. There's all sorts of little ways. And so she said, you know, for some people, God calls them to these great heroic moments, and that's how they become saints, right? Maximilian Kolbe trading his life for a prisoner's life in Auschwitz, or, you know, St. Peter being crucified upside down, going back to one of the first apostles. But for most of us, that's not how God sanctifies us.
I have a friend, Ann Patterson. Shout out to Mary Kay Cimino, who's listening to the show right now. She runs a prayer group, and she's always said to me, you know, I just like to, if I pick up a piece of trash on the street and throw it out, I offer it up for the holy souls in purgatory. But it's just something simple, like there's a piece of paper blowing on the street or whatever. And she always says that when she does something like that, she offers it up for the holy souls in purgatory.
Right, right. And that's something to, you know, Therese, I believe, if I recall this correctly, had a devotion to the holy souls and to praying for the holy souls. And, you know, her entire sort of life, she died of tuberculosis. And as she began to become ill, wanting to offer her suffering for souls that had no one to offer them for, she's the patron saint of the missions. And that is why Cardinal George, the
speaking of missions,
yes, had a great devotion to her. And I remember he visited Lisieux. Probably it would have been about 10 years ago, but I remember he was allowed to go into the room where she died, which not every pilgrim gets an opportunity to do for obvious reasons. And he was telling me what a beautiful moment that was when he was there. And he also told me a very interesting story. His order was from France. They originate in France, the Oblates of Mary Immaculate, founded by St. Eugene de Mazenod, who was a French saint. And they went to, they're missionaries, right? So they go out to the most remote parts of the world. And there were some missionaries sent to Alaska to evangelize the native peoples there. And they had, like, no luck. I mean, like, they couldn't get anything going there. And it was very, very frustrating for them. And they worked for, like, a year. They went back to France. You know, you would go back periodically as a missionary, you know, to get a break and to reconnect with your superiors. And they went to Therese's grave. And they took dirt from her grave, brought it back with them, and then they sprinkled it sort of around the area where they were trying to bring people together for, you know, Bible study and that sort of thing to teach them about the Lord. And that's when their evangelization efforts just took off like wildfire. But it wasn't until they went back and got that grave dirt from Therese's grave in Lisieux that this started to happen. So she's a patron of the missionaries, although she entered a cloistered convent at 15 and never left. She wanted to go to China. She thought she was going to get sent to the Carmel Foundation in
China.
Well,
how hard did she work? I mean, she like went through the back channels to get to the Pope. I mean, honestly.
She was from, and this is like, you know, I always find this very sort of endearing about her. She was from a well-to-do family. Now, were they fabulously wealthy? No. But her father was a watchmaker. Her mother was a lace maker. They were comfortable. You know,
Maybe they had my watch.
Yeah,
it's
they had servants. They had a summer home. They traveled throughout Europe as the upper middle class in that day did. So she was raised in kind of a well-to-do family. I mean, sure, you look at the childhood pictures of her. Her hair is beautifully curled. She's in beautiful, you know, little gowns. I mean, they lived well. And although they were devout, devout Catholics. And I have in addition to, you know, the story of the soul, which if you know nothing about Thérèse, I'd recommend you start there. But there's beautiful, as part of the cause for the canonization of her parents, the letters of her mother and father are really beautiful. And the mother's letters, I find so touching. And she talks about Thérèse's father and his insistence on keeping the Lord's Day holy. And she said, I believe Louis's success in business is a direct result of the fact that he is fastidious about keeping the Lord's Day holy. They do not work on Sundays. It is for family time and recreation and prayer. And she really attributed her husband's holiness and his business success to those things. But she went to, her father took her, Thérèse, and her sister Celine, who was slightly older, on a tour of Europe. And as part of that, they went to see the Holy Father. And they were permitted a private audience with Pope Pius, and she was in the line. She was told, you are to say nothing, you are to kiss his ring and greet him, and that's it, and you move along. But she got it in her
not
head.
So fast.
She wanted to join the Carmelite convent, and so she was in front of him, and she said, Holy Father, I want your permission to join the Carmel at 15. And he didn't know what this kid was talking about. And so she repeated it. She said, Holy Father, I need your permission to join the Carmelite convent at 15. And he said to her, if God wills it, you will enter.
So he spoke French?
You know, I don't know if they were using an interpreter or not. Of course, you know, French was the international language in the day. So
I'm just wondering that they were able to speak the same language.
Well, think of like my mom's old passport was in French and English because French was considered like the second language. So it would not surprise me if he knew it. I don't think she knew Italian. But at any rate, he said to her, if God wills it, it will happen. And she said, no, Holy Father, if you say so, then everyone will have to agree. And then her parish priest kind of scooped her up and said, let's go now. And she was crying and there was kind of a scene. And, you know, so you can just imagine it. But she was then given permission to enter the Carmel at 15, and which was a great heartbreak for her father, who had lost his wife very young. His two elder daughters had already entered. His third daughter, Leonie, who I've mentioned, had entered the Visitation Sisters, and then she left for a while, and then she went back. So all that was left at home now was his second-to-youngest daughter, Celine, who did care for him until his death. And he really did experience tremendous, like, dementia and disorientation and really suffered tremendously, which Thérèse had a premonition of as a young girl. She had this vision of her father walking through the garden, not knowing where he was, and she began to scream and cry. And then the vision turns around and looks at her and then vanishes. So she had this vision, you know, this premonition of her dad's suffering. But it always struck me, Cardinal George's devotion. I mean, again, you think this is a devotion to a 24-year-old girl who did nothing but live in a convent for 9 years, right? So, and then, of course, great, one of the greatest spiritual masterpieces of all time. So that leads me, Mike, to one of the things I want to ask you about, which is the new documentary coming out on Cardinal George at the end of the month. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I suppose we could chat a little bit.
That's why you're here.
Okay. Well, in that case, I guess I have to. Yeah, well, as you know, since you're a big part of it, myself and my team at Shalom World created a documentary on the life of Cardinal George from the beginning of, you know, his birth till his death and beyond. And I interviewed 29 different, unique, wonderful people, from Cardinal Dolan and Bishop Barron to his sister and his barber.
So you got everybody. You got all the important people.
I think there's 8 bishops, and then there's a deacon and several lay people, Colleen Dolan, yourself.
Myself, yes.
Father Dan Flens, his priest secretary. So
right.
The people that knew him best.
Right.
And we retraced his life, basically, and the different you know, things that he accomplished in his life, the different obstacles. This wonderful young man, Michael Heinlein, who's writing his biography right now, who knows him intimately, even though he only met him a couple times. He's writing his biography, and he's been out to Portland and to Yakima, and he's been to, you know, down to the OMIs, you know, with the OMIs. He's really covered all the bases. I had Father Bill Westman, who's now 90 years old, who was there when Cardinal George joined as a 13-year-old. So he goes back tracing his priesthood to his first days when he joined that community. So it's an hour and 20-minute documentary on his life. There's obviously a lot more material that we had over 20 hours of interviews that we cut down into this hour and 20-minute program, which will be showing at the seminary at University of St. Mary of the Lake on Sunday, October 21st at 11:15 a.m.
Okay, and how does one get tickets to that?
You can go to the seminary website, or his barber just called me this morning and says, Mike, he's
I want a ticket, right.
He says, how am I going to get a ticket? And I said, well, then you need to go to this website. I mean, nobody's going to kick him out, but I want him to come. You go to www.bit, B as in boy, I as in igloo, T as in Tom, dot L as in lovely, Y as in yellow, / Cardinal George.
Okay.
Which is interesting because you say, oh, is it .com, .net? No, it's just www.bit.ly/ Cardinal George, and that'll take you to the Eventbrite site. And you can get up to 8 tickets. So,
okay.
But it's
and
going
how,
to be slimmed.
Yeah, it's well.
And it's free.
It's free.
It's
oh
free. You
God,
just need
free.
To drive up to Mundelein.
It's free, but you need a ticket.
You do.
Okay.
Because there's only 900 seats available.
Did you get me a ticket? Do I need one?
I'll scalp a ticket
Thank
for you.
You.
You'll pay a little bit.
I haven't
bit,
signed but, up yet. Oh, no, that doesn't
But
seem...
I don't think they'd turn you away at the door.
I would hope not.
But you never know.
Because I'll create a scene. There will be a scene.
So it's going to show at 11:15 on Sunday the 21st. And after that...
So go to Mass early or go to Mass
Well,
Saturday
the Rector's
night.
Mass is at St. Mary of the Lake that day at 9:30. So there's a Rector's Mass at 9:30 in the chapel there.
Okay.
Then there's a reception.
Oh, great. So if people can go to Mass prior.
Then there's
that's
a reception
great.
In the refectory, a little lunch or whatever. And then there's the program. And then I think I'm going to talk and maybe, who
maybe
knows?
Maybe other people.
You, the barber. This barber... He's a show stealer.
Well, you don't want me. Get the barber.
Alfredo.
He
you
sounds
know,
he's a lot better than me.
He's a lot of fun. Well, he's the one who said the Cardinal looked like a bum.
Oh, gosh,
he called
that's
him
so
up.
Funny.
He called him up on the phone. That's what got
oh,
my
he
attention.
He saw him on television.
He says, Your Eminence, you
yeah.
look like a bum. And Cardinal's like, what do you mean? He says, who is this? And he got through to him. He's like, this is your barber. And, you know, Cardinal didn't have a lot of hair. As a matter of fact, Sheila Agminas just interviewed me the other day. She says, I want to know. Oh, what kind of a haircut did Cardinal George get? I said he loved the shave.
Right,
that was a luxury
right.
that he
was.
Loved.
And he so rarely afforded himself luxuries. I mean, truly.
Well, Alfredo went to his house right before he passed.
Oh, that's right.
And
I know.
It was a very emotional. He was one of two people that cried during the interviews, and he says, "Your Eminence, you know, because Cardinal George got mad at him for coming on a Sunday. He says, I want to do this. I can do what I want with my life." And he says. When you go meet the Lord, please see if he's got a little room for a little barber shop up in heaven for a barber.
That's what I love
and
it.
That's how he left it. So he's wonderful. I love him.
It.
And I did
yes,
my interview
Alfredo
with him.
The barber. Fantastic.
I did my interview with him with shaving cream on my face.
Oh, good heavens. All right. Well, on that note, we are going to go to our next break. Listeners, please don't go away. And do plan to come back for the second half of this joyful hour with Mike Stark and Mary Fiorito here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? work, or just lost interest. To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I am sitting in today for Father Anthony, as I do on most Mondays, here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have been joined this hour by Mike Stark, who is occasionally filling in for me, was very kind to take over my mic here for most of the summer while I was traveling, giving talks and dealing with my children and all sorts of other family things. So thank you, Mike, for that time that you
it was fun.
So generously gave.
It was a lot of fun.
I came back and people were like, where's Mike? You know, you're back. You know, everyone got very attached to Mike here. In the viewer area. It's true. Everyone liked you. Well, you had great guests on, too. You know so many people.
I know a few.
You're very connected. So that was which helped you when you were putting together this documentary on Cardinal George.
Well, that's why they asked me to do it.
Yeah. I mean, boy, you 8 bishops and the barber. You know, everybody from the barber to the bishops, you knew them all. And Mike, so this is, I know it's going to premiere at Mundelein Seminary. And again, people, you can go online to the Ebright website to be able to get a ticket. There's no charge for the tickets, but you need a ticket to get in because there's limited seating. However, it's also going to be on PBS, isn't it?
Yeah, we're talking to them right now, but it's probably going to be on PBS and EWTN as well. This is a story that really needs to be told, especially with the negative image that's going on right now about the Catholic Church. It's nice that, and this will all work itself out. It's a cross we have to bear, but such good news. I mean, a wonderful man who, in my opinion, and several other people who we interviewed, including Archbishop from Milwaukee, Listecki, and Bishop Goddard, and several other people, that Cardinal George was a saint. And he's got such a wonderful story, overcoming obstacles as a handicapped 13-year-old through his whole life to become one of the most renowned and obviously brilliant bishops, not only in the United States, but in the world.
Yeah, and you know, it's...
You know.
Oh, I know. And he really did attempt to live a life that was, you know, one of poverty and obedience and certainly chastity, and he was exemplary in that regard. In fact, you know, we used to joke in the office, he took the vow of poverty, we all lived it with him. And but he really was, like you talk about the shave being a luxury, he denied himself so many things that he could have availed himself of because of his position. And, you know, he lived in the Archbishop's residence, which some people call, incorrectly, I might add, call the mansion.
He corrected me on that once.
Yes, it's the residence, the Archbishop's residence.
Well, his car. It's not a limo.
No, he didn't have a limo.
He wouldn't have a limo.
No, he wouldn't. And he always had an American-made car. And he didn't drive himself because he couldn't because of the brace on his leg, because of his polio. And but the first floor of the Archbishop's residence is very nice. It's decorated very beautifully. It's because they have receptions there. They entertain, you know, potential donors and other dignitaries who are guests here when they come to visit. However, the upper floors where the Cardinal stayed were very, very simple, very simply, you know, laid out and very simply appointed with, you know, I remember one time when he became ill and he was in his wheelchair and he couldn't come downstairs, I went and brought him lunch one day and we had lunch together. And honestly, I was just saying, you know, Cardinal, give me, you know, a Target gift card for $100 and I could make this place look a little nicer. And he said, no, we are not spending money on this house when we don't have to. So he was very serious about that.
Well, we're going to show the documentary for the nuns and for Bishop Goddard and several of the staff, the pastoral staff, at the residence. We only have one problem. They don't have a television. So, so I was talking to Bishop Goddard. I said, what are we going to show it on? So we're going to bring a TV in to show them when we do that. But it's nice because, you know, these people have been, you know, this is his home. And Father Mike Grezik even said, you know, he knows about the event at the seminary. He knows some other events that may be coming up. He says, you know, that's really the one I want to go to because I'm a priest, number one. And I discussed my vocation before I became a priest with Cardinal George in that residence. But the other thing was, that's where the man lived his life. That's where he died. And he feels there's something special with the chapel being there, and that to watch his life story unfold in the place that he lived in and actually passed away in is something special.
Yeah. No, it's
but it's very sparse.
That's going to be a beautiful moment. Yes. Well, no. Well, it's simple. And
right.
I think for the Cardinal, I always thought that that was a cross for him that he carried, having to live in that house, because it seemed ostentatious.
Right.
And he didn't live that way. And in fact, I think I can't prove this, but I think he took on like extra penances so that, you know, to kind of make up for the fact that, you know, but he had to live all the time with people thinking he was living this life of grandeur and luxury.
It is pretty it's got a great curb appeal. Let's put it that way.
Well, it does. And you know what? And it's in a beautiful neighborhood.
Yes.
But it was not in a beautiful neighborhood when the diocese built it. It was built to be the original chancery office.
Mm-hmm.
It was across the street from a cemetery. It was in a terrible part of town. And it was very cheap land, which is why the diocese built that building there at the time.
When was it built?
Oh, gosh. It's at least 100 years ago. So in the late 1800s,
okay.
It was built. And it was the neighborhood, again, was one of the worst in the... You know, the city at the time. Remember, all the action was happening
south. Yes, ma'am.
Everything was south. That's why the Field family,
University
of Marshall Fields, had their mansion there.
Yep.
All the big names, the Potters, all the big wealthy Chicago family had their mansions, properly called mansions, on the south side. So the north side was
South Shore.
South Shore. That South Shore and Kenwood and, you know, even some of the areas slightly north of that. Those were the places to be if you had money. You did not live on the north side. So the house has very humble beginnings. As the city changed and there was shifting in neighborhoods and in populations and in demographics, it became a very wealthy neighborhood. So the land is valuable. The house itself needs... at least $1 million in repairs.
Oh, it needs
to
probably...
You know, it's old. It's,
more than that.
You know, I don't think there's any, if I don't recall correctly, any bathroom upstairs where the sink, where the hot and cold water come out of the same faucet. It's like a hot water faucet and a cold water faucet. Remember those?
No, I don't.
I do. I remember from one of the first homes we lived in when I was a child, you know, you had to get your hot water out of one faucet, and then you would go over and put a little cold in it so it would be warm so you could wash your hands, or you wash your face before you went to bed.
Okay.
So I remember sinks like that, and that's what they have upstairs. So I think the last time the upstairs really had any kind of significant renovation or decorative elements added to it was when John Paul visited in 79 because he was staying there. So Pope John Paul came shortly after he was made. I think it was one of his first.
So they went to a single spigot faucet at that point?
Maybe that just for the Pope, but he wouldn't have wanted luxury either. So
no.
So there is one bedroom there where Pope John Paul II stayed when he visited Chicago. And remember that famous scene, he came out on the balcony because the residence was surrounded by people wanting to, you know, and he said, go sleep. Pope wants to sleep. Go home. Go sleep. And which, of course, just endeared everyone to him even more. So at any rate, Mike, if people want to get the tickets for the upcoming documentary on Cardinal George, can you just read that one more time? It's Ebrite is the...
Eventbrite.
Eventbrite. I'm combining Evite and Eventbrite.
Right.
Into Ebrite, but it's not.
Eventbrite. www.bit.ly/Cardinal George. Again... you go to that, and it's www.b as in boy, I as in igloo, T as in Tom, .l as in lovely, Y as in yellow, / and then Cardinal George. Not .com, not .anything, just that's it. I don't know why, but that's how it is.
Okay.
It's at the seminary. Sunday the 21st, following the rector's mass at 11:15. A.M.
Okay, terrific. And on that note, we are going to go into our final break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about the Justice Kavanaugh confirmation hearing.
There's no justice.
Yes, no, there's not.
And, not for him.
And apparently there's no longer, you know, a presumption of innocence either. But
no.
We'll get back to that when we come back here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold, up or down, this way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the Donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I am sitting in today here for Father Anthony on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ, joined this hour by Mike Stark, the executive producer of the Truth and Life Bible series, and also the producer of the soon-to-be-released documentary on Cardinal George. And Mike and I, we have had a wide-ranging conversation the past
hour. It's about to get wider.
It's going to get wider. Started with the Cubs, on to St. Therese of Lisieux, whose feast day it is today, on to Cardinal George, his devotion to St. Therese, and also this documentary Mike has produced, which is fantastic. And that's not just because I'm in it, for many other reasons as well. But I don't want to let this hour pass without talking about a little bit, you know, and maybe trying to bring a Catholic perspective to, you know, the national turmoil. I don't think there's another adjective to describe it better over this possible justice Kavanaugh, now currently Judge Kavanaugh, confirmation hearings. Mike, did you watch the I don't want to call it a debate, but
circus.
It was a circus. It was disgraceful.
The sham.
It was disgraceful.
As Lindsey Graham said.
It was disgraceful. And I thought, thank God for Lindsey Graham. I have to say, I have tremendous sympathy for Dr. Ford. I really do. I feel very sorry for her. She seemed to me to be a troubled woman. She was struggling to remember things. The very strange exchange about her not being able to come out because she was too afraid of flying, but yet she flies all over the world
right.
for her scuba diving or her, no, she doesn't, she's not a scuba diver. She is a, what is she?
A frequent flyer. We'll just call her.
Yeah, she's a frequent flyer.
Who's afraid to fly.
She is a surfer. She is a surfer, yeah.
Right.
And of course, came by plane. And so.
And she'd just been out to Rhode Island by plane a couple days prior.
Right. No, I know.
And she didn't know that they would have gone to her. Because her attorneys didn't let her know that because they wanted it on TV.
Yeah, I really do.
I think that Katz lady is, I'm judging before I should, but I'm thinking that Katz lady, who's an activist, is the one who leaked this.
Yeah.
So
well,
it could
somebody,
be in
somebody
front of
leaked
everybody.
It. There's no
Soros.
There's no question. There's no question. It was leaked. And I know Dr. Ford made a point of saying that she was not a pawn, that she was nobody's pawn. I believe were her exact words. And I believe that she thinks she's not a pawn.
You've convinced me, now convince yourself.
Well, right. I believe that she thinks she's not a pawn, but nonetheless, I believe she's a pawn. And there's an interesting article for those of you who kind of want to deal with facts first, without spin covering them.
No spin zone.
No spin zone.
Bill O'Reilly.
If you go to the website heavy.com, like the weight, heavy.com, there is an extensive article today where the Rachel Mitchell memo, Rachel Mitchell, you remember, is a veteran sex crimes prosecutor from Maricopa County, Arizona, and she was chosen by the Republican Party to question Christine Ford and Brett Kavanaugh because of her expertise in interviewing victims of sex abuse, but also perpetrators of sexual abuse. She's a prosecutor, so it is her job to build a case around sexual abuse claims. And so she... did a memorandum in which she wrote up what she calls her own independent assessment of Dr. Ford's allegations based upon her independent review of the evidence and 25 years of experience as a career prosecutor of sex-related crimes. And she says, you know, I'm not trying to project my viewpoints onto anyone in either party, but I have to say that this particular case has many weaknesses in it. And she mentions in her memo saying that the case is not only a weak case, it's an extremely weak case. Mike, did you watch her testimony?
I watched the whole thing.
And how did she strike you?
Mitchell?
Yes.
She was she was sort of limited as to the scope of the depth and scope of her questions because she was on a time limit.
Right.
So she didn't really get to delve into a lot of stuff. Seemed like she knew what she was doing, but I didn't find her.
She didn't cross-examine well. And that's one thing a prosecutor.
Well, they said Lindsey Graham should have been.
Yeah.
But again, then it would have been tainted.
Yeah, you have a male questioning a female.
And a Republican questioning.
I think having her was not necessarily a bad idea, but Alan Dershowitz actually made this point of all people saying that woman could have been picked apart to nothing.
For
on
a liberal.
And
Dershowitz has certainly taken the other side.
Yeah.
And he's getting picked apart for that. But the bottom line is he's giving an honest appraisal of the situation. And I think it would have been better for everybody had they done it, not in public. And then you get this clown Avenatti coming out claiming these other cases. I mean, these other cases are coming out of the woodwork. It was like Trump right before the election, last minute. They're like, we got to get these. So they picked five or six women that claimed that he'd did stuff to them, and that was all false.
Well, here's what
he's not a saint, but I'm telling you what.
Yeah.
They're looking for whatever they could, and I do believe when it comes to Judge Kavanaugh that he's a Catholic, and I'm not saying, oh, he's Catholic, let him go. But it almost, I mean, I'll tell you myself personally, I got tears in my eyes listening to him talk.
I did
You know, about his daughter. He seems like the nerdy guy. But yeah, he had a couple beers, and the nerds, sometimes when they have beers, they get a little funny, but he doesn't seem like that kind of guy that would assault someone.
Well,
and he would have done it repeatedly, as was said several times. You don't just do it once and walk away.
Right. And here's the thing. I went to, yes, and that I think is a very compelling point. And having worked for the Catholic Church for many years, I have some more than that, probably the average person's knowledge of sex abuse and predators. And there's never just one victim. There's never just one victim. And when an allegation is made public about somebody, there's allegations that come forward right after that are substantial, that are specific, that can be proved, that are credible. That did not happen here.
How about the 65 women that said it's not him?
Brett, this
they
was
don't
not,
count?
And you know what? I went
those
to
don't count?
A Jesuit.
65 to 1?
Yeah.
That's a landslide.
And including, and as he pointed out, which I think was quite right for him to do so, they not only put their names to this, they put their names to this knowing it could affect their personal.
It will.
And it will. Oh, yeah. They'll be the targets next for supporting Kavanaugh. But, you know, I went to a Jesuit high school not unlike the high school that Kavanaugh went to.
Georgetown Prep.
I went to St. Ignatius, which is the sort of the equivalent of Georgetown Prep in Chicago. And I knew young men like Brett Kavanaugh. You know, we're the same age. I knew young men. He's a year older, I think, actually. So I went to high school at that time. There was a lot of beer drinking. But I can tell you, to be first in his class at Georgetown Prep is no small feat. And there is no way he could have done that. There's no way. I know. I went to this kind of high school. I know the academic pressures. The guys who were first and second and third in my class, did they go to parties and drink? Sure, everybody did. Everybody drank beer, but they did not do it. They couldn't have done it to excess and been first in that class. It's not possible.
With the sports and everything else.
And on top of it, captain of the basketball team.
He didn't have a girlfriend.
No.
I mean, I can tell you from my experience growing up, I didn't have a girlfriend in high school. All I cared about was sports.
Right.
That was my focus. And I'm not saying that I'm not projecting this on him, but I'm saying there's no way I could have those grades and do all the sports I did.
Right.
And he did the sports to an exceptional level.
What was most persuasive for me, he had those calendars.
They're making fun of those calendars. They think it's creepy. Well, guess what? My dad had calendars. I've got calendars.
I know people I have a friend who does that, who's been doing it for 20 years. He lists every meeting.
Thank goodness he had them.
Thank God. And there's a lot of people who do that. And usually it's very smart, like my friend is like this. He's a lawyer as well, and he keeps very specific, detailed calendars. And he just said, you never know when you're going to need something like this. And I want, you know, and for my own memory. It's like at the end of the year, I like to go back and like look at stuff I've done. And it's not necessarily to protect myself, but it's a helpful memory jog for me. But you know what? What's interesting, and again, if you go, listeners, to heavy.com and just Google Rachel Mitchell memo, that the memo that Rachel Mitchell sent to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee says, in a legal context, and this is Rachel Mitchell, neutral party, a lawyer with years of experience in prosecuting sex abuse cases, said, a he said, she said case is incredibly difficult to prove, but this case is even weaker than that. Dr. Ford identified other witnesses to the event, and those witnesses either refuted her allegations or failed to corroborate them. For the reasons discussed below, I do not think that a reasonable prosecutor would bring this case based on the evidence before the committee, nor do I believe that this evidence is sufficient to satisfy the preponderance of the evidence standard. So that's really remarkable. I'm almost frightened to put this on my Facebook page. I think I might, but because I think it's in fairness to people who really are trying to, you know, understand, reading Rachel Mitchell's memo, I think will be helpful.
But somebody else, there's always one in every party that's going to slam you. And I would just say this, the FBI has already investigated him six times to the utmost extreme. So this is the seventh one, and they want to focus on this. But then it's really just a delay tactic, and that's what it is. I don't care. I mean, I've been on the show. We talked about the day I was here with Kevin White doing this show the day that Trump nominated him.
Yes.
And Kevin and I were talking about it, and I made the comment back then, and I'll say
so
it again.
Kevin White is a local attorney.
Lawyer.
A lawyer from, and is also part of the group Catholic Citizens of Illinois. I listened to some of that interview. It was excellent, Mike.
And I made the comment that, you know, whoever Trump nominates, they will resist with all effort, and he could nominate, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg's twin sister. They would oppose her. And the point is, they can investigate. The FBI will investigate. And maybe that'll put at ease the minds of some of these people that are so-called on the fence.
Right.
Like Flaky Flake and some of these Murkowski and Collins. But honestly, he's a good man. He's a constitutionalist. He's the guy we need in our country at this time.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to just say, hopefully, at some point, he may get to review Roe versus Wade.
Well, but, and you know what? It's disgraceful that it seems that our Constitution's, you know, presumption of innocence was not afforded to him. Which,
what are you talking about?
Well, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, well, listeners, I'm sorry. Time is the enemy here, and we have run out of it. But thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ. God bless you. Have a beautiful week.
Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. To say when right from wrong has become so obscure, it does not take that long. Can you see? Can you see? We'll be right back.
truth left unsold, the truth left unsold.